Hello and welcome to the September 16th edition of the TMS Wiki's call-in discussion group. Today we are continuing with Nicole Sachs's book, The Meaning of Truth, Embrace Your Truth and Create Your Life. We are very happy to have Nicole herself with us today. Nicole is a LCSW, that stands for a Licensed Clinical Social Work. Did I get that right?
Yep, social worker, yes.
Yep. And she is a TMS survivor herself, as well as a patient of Dr. Sarno's, a member of Dr. Sarno's panels, and a TMS therapist herself.
Yes,
so we're very happy to have her with us today. Today we are going to go over, we've got two sections that we're going to work on. We're going to finish up that wonderful section on examples. Examples are so helpful for figuring out what it really means. And we're going to start with a woman who recently was divorced, yet there was something that she had to do. And that woman happens to be Nicole herself. And then we are going to move on to what I think is a very important chapter about process. I do have to say that this is basically a book group. We come and discuss and share our experiences as peers. If you have a medical or mental health issue, you should see an appropriately licensed practitioner. This can't substitute for that. We, of course, would suggest a TMS-aware practitioner. Also, of course, the opinions expressed here are the opinions of their speakers. The opinions do not necessarily represent those of the PBDTMS Peer Network, the nonprofit which is sponsoring this discussion. So without further ado, let's take it away. Nicole, as I look at that fourth example, it looks like, in some sense, you had done it perfectly. In the sense that you had done your divorce and you were getting through, but something wasn't quite right yet.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
And tell us that story. Set the scene for us.
Okay. So essentially, something I didn't realize, I think, but it kind of came to me, when I was already in the midst of it, is TMS, it comes in many forms, and it can trick you. You know, if you solve your back pain, all of a sudden you have, you know, migraines, you might be like, oh, well, no, that's not TMS. I have migraines now. That's different than back pain, you know? And I think that that was kind of what happened to me, is that I moved. My children were settled and happy. I had new love in my life. I had a house I could afford. Like, there were things that all fell into place, but I didn't realize that I was sublimating. That's, of course, a fancy word for it. I was pressing down into my unconscious certain feelings that I wasn't aware of. And so what ended up happening was I just got really sick. It wasn't a pain. It was a string of illnesses, which I've never had before or since. And that's the craziest thing. You know, I'm not a sickly person. I don't get ill very often. And what happened in those couple months is I had three strep throats, a cold constantly, a couple stomach viruses, to the point where it just felt as if I might need to take a deeper look, but I just still was tricked. I was tricked the way TMS tricks us a lot, which is like, I thought, okay, sorry, I feel like there's a glare in my light. But I was like, you know, I'm living in a new environment. There's different flora. I'm living at the beach now. I did all that stuff I encourage my clients not to do, which is to explain it away based on physical factors instead of taking a look within. So it was actually probably one of the most poignant things that ever happened to me because, and I explain this in the book, that I developed a severe, when I say severe, I mean like the worst case you've ever seen in your life, of hives. And they were all over my body. And they went from like here, they were on my palms, they were on my fingertips, my legs looked like I had leprosy. I mean, it was, I hate to sound horrible and egotistical, but it was the worst trauma I've ever experienced in my life. Because first of all, I was so disgusting, I couldn't even picture leaving the house. And second of all, I was in horrible pain. I mean, if anyone's ever had hives, I mean, they itch, they burn, you can't touch them, nothing can touch your skin, you don't even feel comfortable.
So you can't relax.
Oh, yeah. Not at all. I mean, you don't even feel comfortable having, like, sweatpants on. Like, it was so horrible. And in the midst of this episode, it occurred to me, wait a second. You know, the doctors had me on steroids and painkillers, and I was, you know, traumatized. And I was like, could this be TMS? And it was so not on my radar at that moment. So I excused myself to my bedroom for an entire day, and I opened up my laptop, the one that my mother is using now, and I wrote. And I wrote and wrote and wrote, and I did my journal speak, and I took my own advice. And this is before I even, wrote my book. And what I came up with was, I needed peace. I needed to go home. I didn't even know what that meant at the time, because I've moved a lot and I don't have a specific home, but I had to not fight with my ex-husband anymore. And one of the things that's really important that people understand is, and I say this all the time, you can't solve your problems by, you can't count on solving your problems by having another person be part of that situation. Because very easily, excuse me, I'm sorry, my dog is chewing a cap to a water. Okay, stop it. Stop it. She's back. Okay. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, I don't want people to read that example and think the only reason I healed is because I spoke to him. I want people to understand that I reached my truth, which was, I can't stand this life of feuding and, you know, one-upping each other and arguing about the kids. And it was such a new experience because we were actually divorced. And so, like, it wasn't like I couldn't, you know, I could have done anything I wanted. I mean, you know, within reason, that we were divorced. I didn't have to be his partner anymore. But I was so angry and upset about the fact that we were fighting so badly. And I was so wrong. I always say, desperation leads to surrender. Surrender leads to truth. And I was so desperate. And I was so sick. And I was physically embarrassed. I mean, if that had moved to my face, I can't even tell you what it looked like. It was horrible. And I called him, David, my ex-husband, and I said, in hysterical fashion, I can't fight with you anymore. But the beauty of where TMS pushes us, and I try to help my clients embrace this, is I would never have had the guts to call him and say that. Mm-hmm. But because I was so desperate, I was in so much pain, and he, you know, initially he was kind of like, why the hell should I stop fighting with you? And I was like, because I'm dying. I was really, really, really raw. And he was like, let's stop fighting. And that's why I give him a lot of credit, because it's not necessary to heal from TMS to have that other person say, let's stop fighting. Because I know so many people that look to their spouse, their husband, their mother, their father, their kid. They're never going to get that from that person. Some people, you know, or that person could already be dead, or that person could be mentally ill. There's so many people, and there's so many situations that people go through. But what happened to me is I found my truth, which is this was killing me. And I swear on my children, on this beautiful puppy, 80% of the hives were gone by the next day. The day after that, they were completely gone. And I have not been sick since. That was 4 years ago. I mean, a little cold, like a little bit. I have not required medical attention for illness in 4 years after that 6 month block of being completely debilitated by illness. And there's no, you know this, Forrest, there's nothing more potent than TMS that flows through my brain. I know it's true. I know it's true through experience. I know it's true through my clients, through my years of speaking on the panel, through my relationship with Dr. Sarno. So that's, you know, the long-winded answer to your question.
Very interesting. It's quite a powerful story. Now, when you talk about, I thought it was very, very interesting about what you're saying about it sounds like change happens within. And it'd be interesting to hear what would have happened if he hadn't said, "Okay, I'll stop fighting." Like, how could your truth have led to healing in that case if you hadn't been lucky in that way?
Right. And this is the part that's a little harder for people to grasp. And this is the part that I have had endless questions about. Like when we would speak on the panel, it was the four of us, we each told our stories, and then it was Q&A for about an hour and a half. And when people would come up to me, that was their most important pressing question, which is, I can't do what you've done necessarily. How can I heal? And Dr. Sarno said the same thing, and I've learned that it's true over the years. The unconscious brain that is looking to protect us doesn't give a shit if you resolve your issues with your person. The unconscious brain that is causing us to suffer just needs to understand that suffering is no longer necessary because we are able to say, I get it. I know I'm like that, or I know that's my situation. Do you understand? I mean, does that make sense for us?
So what would you do? Like, what would change in your mind? Is that a situation where simply knowing that that was hurting you would be enough? Or do you have to accept it? So it sounds like you could have gotten acceptance, and I guess I'm just wondering, is acceptance important, or is simply awareness enough?
Acceptance is paramount.
Okay.
Acceptance is more
Okay.
than important. Except nothing can be done with this work before acceptance.
Well, now when I say acceptance, I mean acceptance of trying
PMS
to.
is your problem.
Oh, no, that's why I wanted to clarify.
Acceptance of the person that's doing it?
Acceptance of the person saying, I want this from my ex, but I can't get it, and that's okay. Do you have to soothe yourself in some way, or is it simply knowing I am very, very sad because I don't feel at home because I don't have a peaceful relationship with my ex?
Okay, so I want to answer it on point. When you say soothe yourself, what are you referring to that's more than that?
So, well,
Does
no,
that
actually,
hurt? Feel the
soothe is the larger thing. I guess the question is, a lot of people, if I read Kanaina's book, in Kanaina's book, there's a clear theme that Steve Kanaina's book, there's a clear
Are you
theme.
referring to Steve-O?
No, Kanaina.
Okay, sorry, I haven't
Kanaina.
had a chance to
Okay,
read
all
it.
right. There's a clear theme that it is about awareness of the emotions. So TMS is there to hide certain emotions from you, and the goal of, and once you become aware of the emotions and accept that you have the emotions, it doesn't matter if the emotions are very, very, very strong. You can still have the emotions. In your case, maybe you could still feel totally at a loss. You could still feel like
Yes.
you're not at home. You could still feel tremendous sadness
Yes.
for not having that relationship, that constructive relationship. But as long as you know that that's the emotion that you're avoiding from, that is sufficient to overcome the emotion. Whereas another person might say, well, once you know that that's the emotion that's really tearing you up inside, that allows you to work on that emotion. It allows you to release that emotion. It allows you to accept that, okay, he's not, I don't have the relationship that I'd like, but I'm stronger than that and I can move on. So the question is awareness enough, the first version, or do you actually have to get to something where you can overcome the negative emotion and have some sort of acceptance and not be miserable anymore? So if you're still miserable, but you're aware of the emotion that's causing you misery, is that enough?
I completely understand the question. Before I answer it, Eric, I feel like you had something to say.
Oh, well, to me, it was what I heard you saying was, to get back to peace with yourself, get back to peace with yourself and that emotion. It's not about you and him, really. It's about you. But anyway, that was pretty much it for right now. If you
No,
want to answer the
well,
fourth question.
that's a really great insight though, because it really nothing and this is going to sound really like out there, but nothing is ever about anything but you. And I think
Yeah.
people people don't understand that all the time because we're so brainwashed in our society to say, well, I can't fix this because that's about he and I, or that's about, you know, my dead mother, or, you know, but what people don't understand is we live within our brains. You know, when people argue that psychosomatic illness is impossible, I say, if I go like this to my arm, okay, I can't feel it without my brain. My brain is the reason I feel anything. And I mean, you know, in essence, even though it's much more complicated. So really, like, that, what Forrest is saying.
Or asking.
What Forrest is bringing up, and it's a kind of annoying answer that no one likes, but it's both. Because okay. We must create an awareness of how we feel about things, but then we must delve deeper. But it works if it's just with yourself. You don't have to resolve any sort of relationship except right. for within yourself. You know, I often say,
but you do have to resolve it in yourself.
Yes. You
have. Okay. If you awareness
stay
isn't
angry
enough.
And stuck, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah. That's my take too.
Yeah.
That's my take too.
If you stay angry and stuck, your TMS may improve, but it's never going to completely go away until you can level with yourself about right. how hurt, angry, you know, rageful, scared, you know, all of it that you are feeling.
And soothe it to some, in some sense, right?
Well, soothe it, like I write, I guess, are we doing patience and kindness this week?
No.
Okay. So in reading.
Yeah, but like patience and kindness.
Next,
okay.
The,
yep.
The concept of patience and kindness is also paramount. So it's right. about we understand our truth, we uh-huh. dig it up, but then it needs to be followed immediately by patience and kindness for ourselves because no one's perfect. We're a product of our environments. Our parents fucked up just like their parents fucked up. We all are a victim of ourselves. And that is so necessary to understand, or else you're going to say your truth and you're going to be like, oh, I'm a horrible person. Like, no, you're not. I don't care what your truth is. You're not a horrible person. So it's about self-soothing as well.
Yep. Okay. That sounds good.
See, when I, last year, I went through the same thing with a brother-in-law of mine. Now, this is after I'd done healed from the pain and everything. And all of a sudden, I started getting sick. And I went to the hospital. I found out that I'd been bit by a tick. And I went through all the antibiotics and everything I had to take and all of that. But still, even though I went through that, I still had something going on, you know. And so when I came home, I understood through journaling that my brother-in-law was about to drive me nuts. Okay, now there's the point there that right. I was saying it was my brother-in-law, but I had to understand that I had to make peace with myself with yep. that part of my life in order to move forth. So what I did was I sat down and I said, the heck with it. I'm putting up my white flag. You know, like when you called your husband and you said, yep. this is it. Yep. I'm begging you. Basically, I did it without even begging him. I just kind of got away from him and went in my room, turned on Andy Griffin movies and did nothing but sit there and just, like Forrest says, soothe myself. Everything I did from that point forth was taking care of that peace for me because I knew I had been giving him all my peace by being angry at him, by being upset at the things he was doing to me while I was sick, which was just making me sicker. So, yeah, when I went in there and just started doing my own style of soothing, my meditations and watching funny movies and getting out in nature and enjoying nature more and doing all of that, that's when I was getting better. That's when I started getting stronger. And what was supposed to take me a year to get better, I got better in a month. So it was enlightening to know that after I'd already gotten over the body pain, I still had this severe emotional thing I was going through that I had to get over, and I was blaming somebody else. But when I understood that I had to take the bull by the horns and look at myself and, you know, say, hey, I got to cultivate the peace. I got to quit waiting on this situation to boil down before I get better. And I just took it in my own hands to be happy at peace, you know, and treat myself with kindness and compassion. And that's how I got over it. That's how I got better quicker.
That's an excellent point. I really think that we are taught as a society that self-soothing is selfish, that like putting ourselves first is like the worst thing you could ever do. And in certain situations, obviously, we all need to sacrifice, whether it be children or our work or an animal, you know, but there's also a huge place for saying, I'm needing something right now. And right. I think it's far too few occasions that we give ourselves permission to do that because we're ashamed and we're embarrassed and we think we should be stronger than that. And that's why, you know, it makes my heart fly when I have all these emails I received from people who have read the book and said, for the first time in my life, I'm giving myself permission to feel something. And that is just paramount healing.
That was an awesome part of the book, Nicole. I just want to thank you for it because it really brought a lot back to me and, you know, opened my insight up to, you know, the many ways that TMS can come to you.
Right.
It can come to you in a lot more forms. And in your case, you know, it was hives and you stand sick a lot. And in my case, pretty much, I don't know if the tick would have bothered me if I wouldn't have been in such a distressed, you know, and a point in my life if I wouldn't have been so distressed. I'm just not sure, you know.
I think that's true about everything. And that's why Dr. Sarno over the years has struggled so much with explaining this to people, which is, it's not that there's no such thing as an injury. You know, it's not that you could play a lot of tennis some summer and have tennis elbow and have a pain. But what Dr. Sarno always said to me is, our bodies heal. If you have a pain because you injured yourself, you're a young, healthy person. You know, for the most part, all of my, anyone I've ever seen in this world is intelligent, young. When I say young, I mean, you know, under 90. I mean, if you are able to feel confident and you can exercise or you can move your body, there's no reason that you should still have that pain 6 months later. And that's what he always said, which is beware the TMS monster because it sees your weakest link and it will infiltrate because it doesn't want you to feel the painful, shameful, you know, impolite. Like you said, you didn't want to have to admit you didn't like your brother-in-law or that he angered you or that you felt rage toward him, right? You know?
No, I didn't want to at all, and that was what was, that's what was keeping me, I mean, I was having migraines, I was, the whole nine yards, I was pretty messed up.
Mm-hmm. And it's so sad to think that the thing that's doing it to you is your own brain. I think people really struggle with that concept, because it feels so mean, you know, that we're going to do that to ourselves. But it's subconscious, and we don't always have a choice until we unmask our truths. And then, you know, it's much better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is great. Thank you for sharing that story, Herbie. That was really wonderful. And likewise, Nicole, we have quite a few listeners online. Does anyone want to ask any questions about this? Do you have any of your own stories that you'd like to share or can relate to the way in which so many things can bring on our TMS and this idea of acceptance and awareness and soothing?
Well, this is Jay. I'm listening.
Hey,
hey Jay.
How's it going?
I think it's going okay. I'd really like to just mainly listen tonight, but when I heard you say, Herbie, about your brother-in-law, as the old saying goes, you were giving him free rent in your brain.
Yes.
I like that.
It was tearing you
I like
up.
That.
And, yeah, you just had to give yourself permission to dispel him from your brain. And
mm-hmm.
That's what got you better from that situation. You let go and
that's
let God
right,
at that point. And,
that was it.
You know, we're supposed to apologize to people, make things right if we did them wrong. But if they don't accept the apology, that's the end of our responsibility. We don't have
to. Yeah, I still.
We have.
I still ain't apologize to him. I apologize to myself.
I think we have cosmic authority and permission to let him go at that point.
Yeah.
Because we have no control past that. That's all we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point we can let it go and then be okay with it.
There was a magical thing that happened right after that, and I've said it before, and it's when I started looking at everything, and after I'd gotten myself calmed down, soothed, and I got peaceful, there was a magical thing came out of it. It was like he wasn't that bothersome, mean, you know, ill-begotten person anymore towards me, and I hadn't done anything different towards him. It was like... Mm-hmm. I started looking at him differently, like I refuse to get angry at you anymore. And all of a sudden, it was like we were friends again. And it was like it was because of that I changed my attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and looking into it.
Yeah, I quit looking at him as the source, and I looked at the source within me and found it, and knew I needed that soothing, that peace. And when I cultivated that, everything around me got better.
Absolutely. That's the key. That's why I say, you know, that's why I have a whole joke, because everybody says, hey, what's your book about? And I said, it's about you. That's every time people can't stand it. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, read it.
Yeah. It's a good book. Yeah. A lot of good things.
And one of my favorite chapters is chapter 7, where you talk mm-hmm. about process. Mm-hmm. And how important process is. Could you, I think that's wonderful because it seems very important for TMS healing to recognize that TMS healing goes, you're going to have your ups and downs. And on the forum, we often talk about outcome independence. So many people get caught up in how am I doing today? Are my symptoms up or are my symptoms down?
Mm-hmm.
But that just seems exactly the wrong thing to do. But you broaden it out to all sorts of healing. That in all healing, you want to focus on what's your version of process?
My version of process is that we spend too much time in our society. I can't speak for, like I say a lot, I can't speak for third world countries where, like, you don't know where your next meal is coming from or if you're going to have genocide, you know, at your doorstep. But as at least in American society and probably most other developed countries, we just have this concept of, like, what's in it for me? How am I going to get better? Tell me the timeline. I'll do what you ask, or give me the pill, or, you know. And the problem with that mentality when it comes to TMS, as you very aptly said, Forrest, that's what takes you backwards. Because this whole disease is fueled by our own delusions of inadequacy and our own fear that we're imperfect or we're not good enough or people don't like us. And so fearing the outcome and, you know, fearing the length of time that it may take for an outcome is counterintuitive to healing. Process, on the other hand, okay, so I use this example often with my New York clients. I say, how far is the drive from New York to Boston? I forget. It's like 3.5 hours or something. Yes, no, maybe?
Something about that, yeah, if you're driving fast.
Let's say 4.
All right.
Let's say 4. No one needs to get a ticket. Okay. Right. So, if you have no traffic, and if you're not going to get a ticket, so you're going to drive essentially, you know, somewhere in between 55 and 65 miles an hour the whole way, it's going to take 4 hours to get there. I don't care how much you want to get there. I don't care how annoying it is. I don't care how much you want to pull over and stomp your feet, because actually, then it's going to take you longer. And process is about accepting the fact that things that are wound up over 40 years are not going to be unwound in 40 days, and that we need to accept ourselves exactly as we are in this moment and then let life unfold. I have it written on my arm. Be true to yourself and let your life unfold. The hardest part for most people, however, is to understand what it means to be true to oneself. Because as Herbie just said, he didn't know that being true to himself was being not angry at his brother-in-law. Probably at some points prior, it felt like being angry at him was the right decision because maybe he's like an asshole or something. I don't know. But being true to ourselves actually means accepting the fact that our acid within ourselves does more damage to the vessel in which it is stored than that on which it is poured. And people can always come to it. It just takes time.
Very interesting. And once again, I muted myself, and so I could not speak. Thank you. Another thing that we often talk about is hope. And I know when
I was just thinking about this today, that eventually you were going to, like, nail me to the wall about the hope thing.
Actually, literally, no, I'm on your side. I'm on your side with hope.
I'm teasing, but this morning in the shower, I don't know why it popped into my head, but I said, I'm doing the book club tonight. Forrest is going to eventually have to ask me about this hope thing.
Yes, absolutely. Well, what about this hope thing? So let me preface and say I'm actually on your side with the hope thing, in that I know whenever someone comes to me and they're first learning about TMS, the first thing I want to do is I just get worried, because if I tell them my story and my recovery was fairly easy,
right.
I worry that I'm harming them. And I want to say straight at the very beginning, there's going to be ups and downs. And I guess what I'm trying to say, now I've got the language for it, it's a process. And you need to focus on the process. That's your entire job. But tell me about hope.
So that
whoever else might nail you to the wall on hope, they at least know the argument.
Okay, well, it's an excellent question. Essentially, the reason I have trouble with hope is because I believe that we're a society that spends too much time being told, cheer up, chin up, you know, time heals all wounds, don't you worry about it. Eventually, you know, you won't even think about that person anymore and how they harmed you, or that death of that person that you never resolved something with, or, you know, the fact that your kids are going through a stage and then they're going to be fabulous. Like, that's kind of a lot of bullshit, you know, in my opinion. It's not that I don't believe in hope. Hope to me is the lifeblood of everything. But the way we define it is, it's wrong. It's like we think that, you know, if you believe that you just keep your chin up and you're going to be fine, and then you're not fine, what does that make you feel like? It makes you feel like shit.
Yeah.
Makes me feel like a failure. Like, what's wrong with me? I can't just chin up. I can't just think of the bright side. Am I a negative person? And I don't buy into that. I think that things sometimes just need to be excavated and felt for people to say, okay, maybe it was impossible to keep my chin up during that period of my life, but you know what? I had a reason, and I'm going to accept and nurture myself for the person that I am. And then magically, nearly, it gives us the ability to move on rather than to stagnate in this, you know, societally influenced, you know, hope. So I hope that makes sense, because I don't want to villainize people's positive attitudes. In fact, we all need them, but you also need to not put a Band-Aid on a tumor. You know, if you have a tumor and it's going to kill you, you can probably find a big enough Band-Aid, but it's not going to heal it. It's just going to hide it.
So is what you're describing, is it realism? Is it realistic hope? Is it hope with acceptance? Can you lay it out very precisely? Because I think people are going to struggle with this. Can you lay it out very precisely exactly what good hope is versus what bad hope is?
I'm going to do something even more simple.
Okay.
Take the word hope out of the sentence.
Okay.
All you need to do is, the first step is, I'm interested and curious, and I'm kind enough to myself to seek a truth in me that I might not embrace right this second. That's the first step. Second step is, let me garner support. If the only support you have is your journal or your pet dog or the breeze in the air when you walk down a path and it's moving through the trees, fine. Then that's your support. It's beautiful. It's all important. And then just ask into yourself, what do I need? Hope in itself is naturally derived from the three things I just said. It's not a concept that needs to be cultivated. It's a natural response to us taking an active role in our healing.
So how would you respond to someone who is afraid and they want to know that they can heal? Is them convincing themselves that they can heal Is that a good sort of hope?
Oh, it's beautiful. I mean, no, yes, that's what I'm saying. Like, I never want hope to have a negative connotation. I just don't want us to gloss over our issues just because we can be full of hope, you know, because like full of hope is nothing if you don't deal with what's really injuring you inside. So you're meaning
one person says, well, I hope this works, and they're really not putting their all into it. And another person says, I hope this works. And it's the actual hope. And then when they're let down, if there's a letdown, that's when they look at it and they just throw their hands up.
That's absolutely right. And
a lot of times the hope will lead them to a path where they just give up, to where you're saying it's a process. And don't let this hope, you know, just because you took 3 steps forward and 2 steps back, don't let this, what's a process, make you, you know, just give up because you're hoping it should have worked out perfectly the first time you tried, or the second time.
I can't say it better than him, Forrest. That's it.
He knows his stuff.
Thank you. These calls sometimes make my chest hurt because I speak so much. Herbie, thank you. That is exactly what this is. That is the essence. If we rely solely on the concept of hope, we will feel like failures, because not everything is going to turn out just because you hope for the best and you're a super positive guy. And I think that's a really fabulous way of saying it, because it invites self-forgiveness and it invites process, which is, let me just live this through. Let me see where I'm going with this. Let me try to be the best I can be each day. You know, I mean, the 12-step programs, all the clients I ever have in 12-step programs love me, because it's the same concept. I'm not going to worry about next year. Let's worry about today. Let's worry about getting through today and being as true to yourself as possible. Hope is cultivated from that.
So you're talking about acceptance, and to accept the situation and be okay with the situation as it is?
Correct. And then to say, that makes me really fucking angry. Does that make sense? Like, you can say this is the situation and I have no power around it, but don't tell me you're fine then, because you're not fine with it.
Right.
And the TMS brain is looking for you to say, I'm fine, because then it'll say, no, you're not. Here, boom, there's a migraine. Take that. Now you have an excuse for not being fine.
Right. I agree. I see your point.
Interesting. Okay.
I feel like the hour's flying for us. Like, it's like so quick.
I know. Well, time flies when you're having fun. That is.
So what do we do about the migraine? What do we do about the migraine?
Did you hear that, Nicole?
Yes, I did. What we do about the migraines is what we do about everything, and within the world of TMS. And I'll just tell a brief story, which is interesting. And Joan might remember this if she was sitting in the audience that day. I for one of the summers that I was in grad school, in fact, the summer in between my 2 years of my MSW, I had debilitating headaches, and I worked as the head of girls camp at a day camp, a really ritzy day camp for New York kids, where they were basically bussed out of the city into this haven every day. And it was an incredibly long day. I had to be up at 6 in the morning because I was a bus counselor, because I needed the money. And I would have to deal with these screaming kids on the bus from 7:30 to 9. And by the time we got there, then I was the head of girls camp from 9 to 4. I got home at 6 o'clock at night and basically crawled hands and knees into my bed and fell asleep. It was a really hard summer. And I had a lot of debilitating headaches, some to the point where I had to leave camp early that day, and I was panicked about them, and I never thought about TMS. This is a long time ago. But what happened was, I decided one day, I'm sitting on the panel, and we're having this awesome conversation, as we always did, and I'm listening to the gentleman to my right, who I don't remember his name, but if anyone remembers, he was the dermatologist. He was an MD. He was about my age, so at the time he was in his early 30s, and he was talking about something about seasonal allergies or something else he got over, you know, that was ended up being TMS. And I had this crazy epiphany sitting on the stage of the lecture hall at NYU, and when the turn came to me, I basically said, I'll tell my story, but I have to tell you something right now. I just figured out I don't need to have these headaches. And everyone's kind of like, what? What does that mean? And I was like, and I told the whole story and I said, I'm not going to have those headaches anymore. I get it now. And I never got another one. Ever. No, I have headaches. Everyone has headaches. But I'm talking about, you can't open your eyes. You need to go lay in the dark. I guess it would be sort of migraine-esque, but I never really thought of it specifically as a migraine. But I guess what I'm saying is it literally occurred to me on the panel. I mean, people were laughing their asses off because I was like, I can't, tricked again, foiled again, you know, by TMS.
Was it the self-imposed pressures and stuff like that you figured out?
Yes.
What process made you understand you didn't have to have the headaches again?
I'm such a victim of TMS. I'm such an easy target for it, and I've been experiencing it since I was about 10, that it was the awareness that this wasn't something I needed to be scared of. This wasn't some new symptom. I had a CAT scan. I'm not kidding. I mean, I did the work behind it to know I didn't have a brain tumor. I mean, Dr. Sarno always said that. You must make sure you're not physically ill.
How did he say that? Did he have any phrases that he used often when he was going to do that? Sorry, it's just been on my mind recently.
I don't remember it being specifically like a catchphrase, because he had some of those. Yeah. But it was more about, listen, TMS isn't everything. So if you're having debilitating headaches, if you're blacking out, I mean, if things are happening to you that are abnormal, you need to be checked out by a physician before you just say it's TMS. And that's why when he had his real practice before he retired, he examined everyone. He's a medical doctor. It wasn't just that I walked in and he said, boom, TMS. I mean, I had to get in the cape or whatever that thing is, the thing. And then I had to lay on the table and he did all sorts of, you know, neurological tests to see about my legs. I mean, this was, and I also had brought in my MRI. And so it's about figuring out first that you do have TMS. And then to answer the question, it's about then just using that same process to tackle the new symptom.
That's the process, is understanding and coming to grips with the fact that you have TMS.
That's the first day of the practice. I mean, the process. And then it's about doing the work to bravely and peacefully uncover the feelings that are keeping you stuck and in pain.
Right, right.
Well, and now that you bring up peace, that's a good segue into a quote, a wonderful, wonderful quote you have at the end of the chapter, 164. The salient point of at this particular moment is that peace equals the following: live your process. Accept the need to look at your life. Understand your motivations. Discover and gently embrace your nature. Make friends with the parts of yourself that are so tied to your nature you know they couldn't sustain change. Nurture the aspects of yourself that make you uncomfortable. They are still part of you and need a place to reside.
So who wrote that?
I don't know. They're smart, whoever they were. This is good words.
I don't know if I could write it again if I tried.
Yeah. But what I like about that is the idea that it's a process. TMS is a mind-body condition, and healing starts in the mind. It starts with the psychology. It starts with getting your mind right, and that's teaching you how to get your mind right. You don't have to worry about the physical stuff. Just worry about following your process. And,
yes.
You know, you still got to drive from Boston to New York.
That's very important. That's so important, because if you get caught up in constantly thinking about your diagnosis or the way the pain is affecting your life, the process is going to stand still. And that's, it's so hard. I want to bring connection to everyone who feels like it's so hard, because it just is. It's just, it's not easy and it hurts.
Let me open it up. Herbie, did you have any questions you wanted to ask? I have a couple more, but I think we are right on time this week, which is wonderful. Deep stuff. Deep, deep stuff. Any questions, Herbie, you wanted to jump in with?
Well, I got this. I just got a phrase. It's page 174 on the Kindle here, but I thought it was a good phrase that she had in chapter 7. It's before what you had just mentioned there, that about the acceptance, the understanding, and so forth for us. It goes like this. It says, every day I wish it could go faster for me in my own process, but I know too much now. I know that there is no way out other than through at our own pace. And this is the part, I didn't write it down, but this is the part right after it tells of the Winston Churchill quote. And, you know, if you're going through hell, then keep on going.
Yeah.
Don't just stop there and keep on going through it. But then next you say the uncovering of deeper truth is the exact path out, which means you will eventually be out of each jail, free of everything that is currently holding you hostage. And that's the way it feels when you have these bottled up emotions on the inside, like you are in jail.
Yeah.
You know? And you're talking about you got the key to be released from that jail through this understanding, this process.
Yes. And that's why it's so hard, because I can speak very personally about this. It almost feels harder sometimes to know you have the key and to watch yourself not use it. And that's why I want everyone who's listening to this or who will ever listen to this on the tape, forgive yourself. Do it right now, because it's so hard. And I wrote the goddamn book on it, and I'm still suffering sometimes. And that is a human condition that needs to be forgiven. We need to forgive ourselves for our suffering. It sounds ridiculous, but it's really important.
That's awesome. And that is the obligation, I would assume, Nicole, that you're talking about here when you say, without the obligation to divert you from seeing and feeling your ugly truths, your brain has no choice but to be your champion. When you make this obligation to face the truths, you know, those deep, dark, whatever issues that's going on, it's often unconscious, and you have to journal speak to get to it. But when you get to it and you look at it, then you write that your brain has no choice but to be your champion, which I thought was a pretty awesome way of saying it.
Thank you.
So finally, I guess to wrap up the session, I've been holding on to a question for Mimi. Are you still there, Mimi?
Yeah.
Excellent. So Mimi is actually Nicole's mother. And if you go to Nicole's website, it is at meaningoftruthbook.com. At the very top, you will see a review by my mother, which you might find to be surprising, as you might not expect to see a review from one's mother there. But Mimi's mother actually, turns out, is an LCSW, an MSW herself. And she talks about how she writes, Nicole was raised as an only child, so our relationship was one-on-one and without the interference of sibling rivalry. This allowed for long and continuous conversation throughout our lives, usually a variant of the same theme. Are you happy? Am I happy? What is happiness? How do people create happiness for themselves? How do they deal with suffering? Now, after years of study, application, and clinical practice, Nicole has written a book that turns all those years of practical inquiry on its ear. Happiness is moments, moments that reveal themselves as we peel away the long-standing message that have led us to believe in the existence of a state of happiness. And I was just wondering if you could explain that. I thought it would be interesting to hear that from your perspective. That's one of the core themes of this process chapter. It talks about happiness is a process, exactly as you're mentioning. Could you give us your take on that?
Me?
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Mom, you're on the spot. All I'm saying to everyone, if you can see me on the camera, is my computer's about to die, so I'm going to plug in. But, Mom, take it away.
Well, I think that the reason that I wrote that, well, first of all, it's all true. And secondly, I think people do seem to buy into this myth that there is a state of happiness. that, you know, when I get the job I like, I'm going to be happy. When I make X number of dollars, I'm going to be happy. If I marry the right person, I'll be happy. But, you know, life just like this is a process, and happiness certainly is included. But to think that if you're not living in a state of euphoria, you're not happy, I think imposes on people, and it makes them feel something's wrong with them. You know, like, how come I'm not happy? How come I'm not living in a state of euphoria? And I think if you make people conscious of that and make them realize that, yes, life has its ups and downs. I mean, this is almost, you know, goes without saying, that we do have ambitions towards certain things and we do achieve certain things. And yes, there's always happiness involved with any achievement, but it's not something that's going to put you in a lasting state of happiness. And yet that seems to be something that people are trying to achieve. So,
disappointed over when it doesn't happen.
Yes, and feel less than because you can't seem to achieve what you somehow feel other people have achieved, because that's the way they talk. So I think if you break it down and you realize just what happiness is, that it's moments, that it's things that you do achieve every day if you think about it. And if there are times when you're not happy, that's perfectly okay. It certainly is part of the human spirit. Then you can live a much more satisfying life.
Very interesting. And corresponds very well what I see on the page. It says, happiness is a moment. It is many infinitely varied moments. Perhaps you've had lots of these moments. Perhaps it's been a long while since you could identify even one clearly. Either way, no one in the world is happy. The same goes for sad, angry, scared, ashamed, etc. Well, thank you. I think when I first read that quote on the website, I didn't know quite what to mean. I didn't know quite what it meant, but I thought this paragraph clarified it very well, as did you just then.
Yeah, thanks for bringing it up for us, because it's really important. It's an important thing. It's an important point because shame is such a big part of pain. And if we feel shameful that we're not happy enough, that can be something that holds us back, like, a lot. So it's a good point.
All right. Well, it is 10:02. So thank you very much, everyone, for joining us this week. Next week, we will continue. We will cover the next two chapters. How? And is the next one called How and a Half? I would love it if it's called How and a Half. I think it is.
Remember.
Okay. How and a Half, the Liz chapter.
Oh, so the Liz chapter. Yeah. I added it, like, after my first stage of editing. Yes, that was important for Liz to bring that point up, hour and a half.
Excellent. And we will find out what it is. Most importantly, I think everybody wants to know how to do it. And so here are the actionable steps. So please do join us next week. And thank you, everyone, for calling, for speaking, for listening. You know, you make it worthwhile. And, of course, for our special guests. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you all.
Bye, all, and see you next week.
Everybody.
thank you, as always.
Bye-bye.